What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 49. A Bastard's Work Is Never Done. I'm one of your hosts, Dave, joined by my other host, Ryan.
I'm the other one.
And we're flipping turns this week. I'm doing the news episode. Again, A Bastard's Work Is Never Done. This Movies On Up, and that's the famous Movies On Up tagline contest. How that works, if you know what movie that's from, usually a movie we talked about last week. Sometimes it's a movie we use as the picture for the episode from last week.
So. Occasionally.
Or sometimes part of the title of the movie is in the tagline. So if you know where A Bastard's Work Is Never Done comes from, hit us up, twitter.com/moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup, moviesonup.com. moviesonup@gmail.com, and we'll send you a lovely prize package eventually.
Well, we gotta get somebody to win first, and
we've got a few winners, we just haven't sent the packages yet.
If you disseminate the information to me, I'll send out some prize packages.
Okay, see, I never knew that, so I was just sitting on them.
Well, yeah, no, I'll pass it along. Oh, yeah,
okay,
pass it along.
But yeah, this is our news episode. If you're new to Movies On Up, early in the week, we do an episode where we do movie news, trailers. This week we have a good batch of trailers, some news, and we're going to go over our MTV Movie Awards pick-ems. And then later this week, I'm very excited for it. We're doing our summer preview.
Are you insinuating that I'm not excited for it?
I'm very excited for it. I love summer preview season.
What I think is neat from this year to last year, most of these movies we've already talked about at some point. We've either done the trailer, we've covered the casting.
So we'll be a lot more informed.
Yeah, they're like old friends coming back to visit. It's going to be rad.
Yeah,
check that out later this week.
Speaking of visit, who visited the box office and who'd they visit this weekend?
Do you mean...
See, I could do segues too.
Yes, you can, and you do them just as poorly as I do, so it's good to see that we're not skipping a beat here. Switching seats. Jackie Robinson visited the box office, and he visited in the number one spot, which I think is about what we both...
Before you give numbers, I set the over-under for 42. I think I set it at 25. Which I think we both took over.
If we both took over, then we were both big winners. Big in that it finished in first place with roughly $27.5 million. Picked the perfect weekend to come out in advance of Jackie Robinson Day, which was Monday. So kind of a perfect storm. Baseball just starting up. I think that was why we both took the over. We were both right.
And it looked pretty good.
Notwithstanding,
it's a big-time story that people know, and it hasn't really... There hasn't been a good telling of that story on the big screen in a long time. I think that had a big part to play in it. Harrison Ford's name, I'm sure,
didn't hurt.
So it just looked really well done.
Everything I've read about it is, you know, the movie does hold up to everything that people thought it would be. So Jackie Robinson delivered.
Our friends at the Nerdpocalypse podcast have another podcast called Black on Black Cinema. And this week's episode is actually on... 42.
I think it's
four black dudes that love movies talking about blacks in movies and what it does for black culture. So they did 42. It's a good listen. So go check that out, Black on Black Cinema.
Cannot endorse the movie that finished number two. As a matter of fact, I think we slammed this movie and hoped that collectively it would make about $5 million.
I set the over-under at 15. I think we both begrudgingly took over. But we both hoped that it was less.
Well, it was less, but it was very close. Scary Movie finished in second place this week with $14 million. That's a bummer. We were kind of hoping that people had learned, and apparently they had not. Scary Movie 2 second place this week.
That's pretty low for those, though.
I guess it's low for those, but I'm still looking at $15 million was spent to go see a scary movie film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the fifth one. Maybe they're getting progressively lower, but I stand behind. I wish it would only make two.
Because, it didn't open as strong as the rest have, but it's only on a $20 million budget. So
we're well on our way to Scary Movie 6.
Because even Haunted House didn't do that great earlier this year. Did okay. It's getting a sequel. So this will do well enough. They can make them at about... If you can make movies for $20 million, maybe next time they'll have to do it for $15. But... For what they're doing, they can still do it. So there's going to be more scary movies.
There may be more of The Croods. That in its fourth week, holding steady at number three with $13 million. Number four this week, falling from the number two spot, G.I. Joe Retaliation, $10 million. It is over $100 million, as is The Croods. The Croods at $142 million in 4 weeks. G.I. Joe at $102 million. Number five was your number one from last week. Evil Dead made just about $9.5 million this week. That's a 63% drop from that one. I guess I'm not surprised to see that. Having seen it last week and not being overly impressed by it, I think that's kind of been the word of mouth carrying forward into last weekend, was that, you know, the diehards went out to see it the first week. That's why it was number one. And then it's just not that great of a movie.
But still, by the time it ends its run, it's going to more than triple its budget.
Yeah, I mean, for what it was, that's fine. I'm just not surprised to see it fall by 60%. I think that's about accurate for that movie. Number six this week, Jurassic Park 3D. No doubt still holding strong because of our Jurassic Park episode last week. I'm sure we inspired a bunch of people to go out and take another tour through Jurassic Park. That made about $8.8 million this week. Falling from number five to number seven, Olympus. Olympus has fallen, makes $7 million this week, followed by Oz the Great and Powerful. Just about $5 million, still hanging around 6 weeks out. It's close to the $220 million mark at this point. Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor got about a dollar for every word in the title. $4.5 million this week. That's down 55% from last week. Rounding out the top 10, The Place Beyond the Pines made $3.8 million, which is up 450% roughly from last week. It jumped up almost 500 theaters from last week. Still makes about 7,000 per screen on the per screen average. That is the best in the top 10.
Minus
not
42,
counting 42, right? Of course, yeah.
And but I mean, that's on 514 screens total. So again, with the star power of Gosling and Cooper, and
the star power in the eyes of those two guys.
Yeah, why is that not on a wide release? It's like, I think this one could have opened wide and done well, especially in the March-April range.
I guess while we're talking about limiteds that increased in theaters, Trance, number 13 this week, was number 32 last week. This week it makes almost $900,000, which again is up 584% from last week. It's now in 438 screens. It was only in 4 screens last week, so it's getting from an incredibly limited release to just kind of a limited.
But it's still not, it's only a 2,000 per screen average, which isn't great.
Which is not tremendous, no. But I mean, you know, it's better than what Oz did. Granted, Oz is in its sixth week. But I mean, it's a little bit less than what Evil Dead did, than Jurassic Park. So I mean, that's another one that maybe the subject matter keeps it from getting a wide release. But I want to see both of those.
Yeah. Oh, I do too, very badly. Or the other limited releases didn't do, not to jump on your
Disconnect
here,
but that was the only other one that was from this week, made $124,000 on 15 screens for about 8,000 per screen.
And To the Wonder, Terrence Malick's new one, 116,000. So we've talked about, it's a good time for limiteds. And then a trailer that we both really liked, It's a Disaster,
$15,000,
about 5,000 per screen, which isn't, it's respectable, but
I've heard it's bad, though. I read a review that said it's pretty much a disaster.
Yeah, which is disappointing because I love that cast. I love almost everything about it. Moving on to things I don't love. Our first news story, Pointless Break, or an alternate headline, Utah. You know what? Just give me one. Erickson Kaur, DP on the first Fast and the Furious and director of Invincible, has been hired to direct the remake of the amazing 1991 bank-robbing surfers movie, Point Break. Kurt Wimmer, fresh off the bomb that was the totally pointless Total Recall remake, is providing the script, which will take the plot of the original and move it into the world of international extreme sports, despite Point Break being a surfing term. Wally Pfister was once offered the directing gig, but he actually has some credibility. Shooting is set to begin later this year.
Good for Wally Pfister to pass on this. The project that he's got now, we don't have a lot of details on it, but we know it's not a remake. I mean, Point Break, it's one of those movies that I think everybody has a soft spot in their heart for. It's kind of, it's cheese, but it's the good kind of cheese.
Yeah, I mean, everything about it, there's nothing about it that should be good. Gary Busey, Keanu Reeves, Lori Petty, Patrick Swayze, surfing bank robbers, like nothing about that should add up. But Catherine Hardwick took that and turned it into something. Like, because of good direction and getting the performances that were just right for the roles, it it's a classic.
You hit the nail on the head with Point Break being a surfing term, so it's silly for it not to be a surfing movie now. But I think, do people care about surfing anymore? I mean, do people know? People maybe in the early 90s knew that Point Break was a surfing term. Surfing was kind of in vogue. But now I don't think people know care.
But why not? Why call it Point Break? Why not?
Oh, to cash in on that. If you call this anything else, you know, people that have an affinity for Point Break are not, none of them
but
will
go see
this.
But people that have an affinity for Point Break aren't going to go see
this. Some might. Some might. People saw Total Recall.
Barely.
Barely, yes.
That was a giant bomb.
Yes.
And you bring in the screenwriter from that.
But if you call that anything else, you know, it's an even bigger bomb. So
if you call it anything else, it doesn't get a $200 million budget.
Probably not.
So it's not going to be as big of a bomb.
It would be as equally terrible of a movie that would have made less money. In the grand
scheme, it would have been made for less money.
You're right, yeah. So in the definition of bomb in terms of poor investment, it wouldn't have been as bad.
Because this has the Point Break name, it's going to get probably 20 to 30% more budget.
It's not going to be good. It doesn't matter what the budget is. I don't care. You care about that stuff a little more than I do. But it's going to suck. That we agree on. It's a terrible idea. Again, it's just
magic that can't be duplicated.
It's trying to cash in on something that, like Turtles, that we feel good about, and it's just going to end up making us mad.
Here's more pointless. With the recent buzz of the documentary Room 237 and the fact that Stephen King is currently working on a sequel to The Shining, Warner Brothers don't want to waste the fact that they own the rights to Kubrick's film version, so they've of course started work on a prequel. The studio has brought on Glenn Mazzara, who was the showrunner on the last two seasons of The Walking Dead, to write The Overlook Hotel.
And I haven't liked the last two seasons of The Walking Dead.
No.
So that's a little bit of a problem. I'm a little surprised that this is going to be a movie, because everything else, you know, you look at the Bates Motel, you know, the prequel to Psycho, that's a television show. You look at the Mads Mikkelsen, yes.
Hannibal.
With everything, it seems like, you mentioned with Point Break, let's take something that people have an affinity for and let's see how we can monetize it. This is a way to monetize The Shining. Let's do something new. Everybody's seen the movie. Not that it was a remake, but the one was it
Steven
Weber?
Steven Weber, yeah.
Right. So let's do something else. Can we do a sequel? Okay, that's already being done. What else is available? Ah, a prequel.
But here's the thing, is they want to use ideas from the prologue that Stephen King cut out to do this. It's going to be a legal war if Stephen King wants it to be, because they had the rights to the novel, The Shining. So a cutout prologue, who owns that? It was cut out before release, so does Stephen King own that, or do they? Plus, they had the rights 40 years ago. At some point, those rights are going to lapse. So I don't even know that they have the legality to make this movie.
Maybe not to use, you know, the Stephen King's idea from the prologue, but maybe they still do. You know, you can renew the rights if you pay for them, or if you have something in development, you know, like we saw with Sam Raimi with his Evil Dead stuff. You know, that had sat on the shelf for a while, and now he's got one in development. But it seems a little bit like, you know, Peter Jackson when he's trying to make The Hobbit. He's like, well, I'm just going to, this is should only be one movie, but I'm going to make it into three because I'm going to take things that were cut out that didn't make the book. And I mean, I guess if you're a hardcore, you know, fan of The Shining, maybe you'll give this a chance if it has, you know, essentially stuff from the cutting room floor that you haven't seen yet.
And this is why you're bringing in a TV writer. Why aren't you doing the Bates Motel approach? Because there's so much, even just in The Shining, there's so much mentioned about what's happened there before he even gets there. Obviously, if the prequel does well, which I don't see it happening, they can do sequels. And you can have your own Shining franchise that all takes place before The Shining. I mean, there's enough story there that they can just keep reinventing stuff to just keep going with it. So why not do it as like an American Horror Story type TV show? But
maybe they're just running out of networks. Everybody's got theirs at this point. I mean, is this going to be for the Disney Channel? I don't know what's left at this point.
Get the F to the big screen. Husband-wife writing team Ken Marino and Erica Oyama have been hired to write a big screen adaptation of Adam Mansbach's children's book for adults, Go the F to Sleep.
I got the audio version of this when my friends had their first child, read by Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And it was great. I think it was free.
That's how people knew this book, is that Samuel L. Jackson, I believe Mansbach's a friend of Samuel L. Jackson, and he narrated it, and it went viral on YouTube. Because
yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson
perfect.
Reading Go the F to Sleep, yeah, that's perfect. Not gonna lie, when I first saw this headline, I thought, man, that's going to be three like pointless stories in a row that I'm negative about.
Ken Marino.
But
makes
then I saw it's
excited.
Ken Marino and his wife who are writing. They're on fire right now with Burning Love. I mean, they created this web series that's just blowing up. Plus, he's got big screen writing credits. He did Role Models. He did Wanderlust.
Haven't seen Wanderlust. Heard very good things about it. Love Role Models.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just love Marino. I love that he's, you know, he's got the Butt Demon movie where he's the lead. I just love to see his career keep growing and growing. So, highly touted after screenwriter. Yeah, I'm for it.
I don't think I will be going to sleep while watching that movie. I'll be wide awake, engrossed.
The Mortal Instruments, City of Confidence. Even though the first installment of the five-book Mortal Instruments saga doesn't hit theaters until August, Constantine Films has already begun production on adapting the prequel series by the same author, Cassandra Clare. Infernal Devices is three books in so far and follows a very similar plot to the Mortal Instruments, except it takes place in Victorian times.
Two things that I hate, books and period pieces. I have to admit, like, whatever that City of Bones, I'm gonna refuse to call it the Mortal Instruments.
Well, the book is called City of Bones.
Or whatever. Yeah, let's just call it, because I mean,
City
that,
of Bones,
okay.
City of Ash, City of Glass, City of Fallen Angels, City of Lost Souls.
City built on rock and roll?
Yeah, City of Lost Souls.
That's the new one. At any rate, I mean, that movie looks kind of interesting. In that, if I had to see a movie in that genre, I'd see this one before I'd see Twilight or
it
whatever that beautiful
more,
creatures
it,
was.
It looks else. More Hunger Games than Twilight.
Yes.
If that's how we're going to gauge tween movies now. Like,
sure.
If we're going to gauge them, that's pretty much, those are the two ends of the spectrums. There's Twilight, which isn't for us. There's
not,
Hunger Games,
not,
which was actually
not necessarily
really good.
In terms of quality, because I can think of things that are worse than Twilight, but in terms of like, do I lose my man card if I go see Hunger Games? It might get bent. But if
so.
Me, hell no, I'm a tough, burly dude. Nobody's going to question anything that I do. But if I come out of Breaking Dawn Part 6, I'm going to get some looks and justifiably so.
I just think it's ambitious because this movie hasn't come out yet. I mean, it's not due for till August, and it's already ambitious because there's five books in here. So, I mean, you're hoping that this first one does well enough that you could keep making them. There's not the confidence in it like the Hunger Games, where you pretty much knew going into the Hunger Games, we're going to make all of them. Harry Potter, you kind of knew. Twilight, you knew. This doesn't have that kind of following to where it's probably going to be on a movie-by-movie basis. Like, if the first one does well, they may greenlight the next two. But, and now you're going to do this, which it's three books in. I think she's got more coming. So it just seems like a whole lot of... You put a lot of confidence in this movie. Go back to October with Paranormal Activity when we were talking about how they want to do a Latin spinoff.
Sure.
And I said, okay, March is a good time to release horror movies. January to March, if you put out a Latino Paranormal Activity...
Paranormal
yeah,
Activito.
And then do one in October, that's twice a year that you're making a lot of money for not much. If you can... do this, like, instead of...
But I don't think you can make this, especially if you're going to make a period version of this, that you're not going to be able to crank it out like you can with Paranormal Activity that's got four people in the film.
But,
you know what I mean?
No. What I'm saying is Hunger Games made it opened to $150 million. It's coming next year, but if it wasn't, if they were taking their time, say this summer or this Thanksgiving, instead of Hunger Games 2, if there were a prequel... that were coming out before Hunger Games 2, you don't think people would go see it? If Mortal Instruments does well and they can get the Infernal Devices done before the second one, that's twice that you can either buy a year between the sequels or you can do two a year.
So you'd like alternate? You'd do like A New Hope, you'd follow it up with The Phantom Menace, then you'd go to Empire?
If they can make it work, I mean, that's obviously what the plan is here. I mean, they're going to run concurrently. It's not like Sons of Anarchy where he's waiting until the series is over to do the prequel series. Like, they want to do... They're clearly going to go concurrently.
I don't like that. How am I supposed to follow... I don't know any
because,
of these characters.
Because here's the thing, is the stories aren't necessarily related. They're just the same.
Oh, well then good.
No, that's
I'm
the
glad.
Thing, is the Infernal Devices is basically just the Mortal Instruments in the Victorian times. That's it. So you're having... I could watch Mortal Instruments and Mortal Instruments 2 and not need to see Infernal Devices. I could see Infernal Devices and only that and be fine. So, I mean, you're doing two movies that are separate from each other but carry that same name, kind of.
Officially, for the record, I don't care.
I know. The Chosen One. James Wan has been chosen as the man to keep the Fast and the Furious franchise alive. He replaces Justin Lin, who left the franchise under concerns of getting the seventh installment ready by next summer's July 11th release date. Vin Diesel and Paul Walker are set to reprise their roles when filming begins this summer, while The Rock says he may not be able to make it work due to filming Hercules overseas this summer. Tyrese is also a person.
James Wan seems like a
weird choice.
Yeah, I'm looking at this going, all right, I've never seen any Fast and Furious movies, but are the cars ghosts?
The first Saw.
Yeah, Insidious.
Insidious, upcoming The Conjuring, and his name's attached to a bunch of stuff as producer, all horror.
Death Sentence, Dead Silence. It just seems like if you look at his filmography, one of these things doesn't belong, and it's Fast and the Furious 7. Maybe he just really liked the movies. I don't know.
The biggest thing to me is the quick turnaround. 6 hasn't even opened, and they're filming 7 to be out next summer.
And it's going to be in Victorian times.
Like that's what... That,
Tyrese is going to have a powdered wig.
That I would watch that, actually. Like that seems rushed. We talked about Wally Pfister seeming rushed. That seems rushed, especially if you're going to lose out on The Rock for it. Because that's pretty quick. Like, The Rock's a busy dude. If you don't lose out on him, chances are his role's going to be smaller.
Reduced role.
But they're talking, originally it was going to be the last one, but now they're talking that it's going to set up storylines for future ones. And you're not going to rush the last one. If 7 were going to be the last one, you're not filming it in 2 months to have it out next year. So they're going to try to find that formula that they haven't even looked for yet and find it.
Maybe the formula is there. It's a spooky movie now.
The Old Man and the Young Gun. David Lowry, who had involvement in 3 films at this year's Sundance, Pit Stop, which he co-wrote, Upstream Color, which he edited, and Ain't Them Body Saints, which he wrote and directed, and was recently hired by Disney to pen a Pete's Dragon reboot, will now be directing Robert Redford in The Old Man and the Gun. Lowry will be writing a script based on David Grand's 2003 New Yorker article about lifelong bank robber Forrest Tucker.
With the exception of the Pete's Dragon thing, I mean, I think that the rest of these, it makes sense that he would be adapting a book about a bank robber. I think he's a good choice for that. I'm glad that, you know, maybe this Pete's Dragon thing is just kind of a detour. You know, everybody's got to eat. If Disney offers you a project, maybe you don't turn them down. But I definitely think that, you know, this is more his wheelhouse.
But what I'm interested in is Redford. Like we've talked about when he signed on for Avengers 2, he's been for decades just doing stuff he's either producing or directing and hasn't really been doing a lot of one-off stuff that he's not involved in. Now he's letting a dude do his second feature.
Either it's one of those projects that he really liked, maybe he's got a big affinity for the book, or maybe dude's got to eat. You know, we said
Robert Redford's fine.
Maybe he's made some bad investments.
I think it says a lot about
Infernal Devices.
I think it says a lot about Lowry. Like, I think the dude's just, I think there's a lot there and people see it. Based on just the last 8 months of his life, it feels like he's destined to just become huge.
Until Pete's Dragon flops and Disney has him excommunicated.
He's only writing it, so chances are it'll get rewritten 4 or 5 times. So his name will be off of it by the time it comes out, but he'll still have the paycheck.
Thomas Lennon's name will be on it, and everything will be fine.
Jim Carrey brings Ricky Stenicki back to life. A project that was all but dead after a few years of trying to get it off the ground is now alive and well again after Carrey's interest and willingness to sign on. Ricky Stenicki comes from a 2010 Blacklist script from Jeff Bushel and follows 3 lifelong friends who have always blamed their fictitious 4th friend to get them out of trouble, who have to hire an out-of-work actor to become their made-up friend after their wives insist on meeting him. Steve Odekirk, who directed Ace Ventura 2 and wrote Bruce Almighty, will rewrite the script and direct.
I think the idea is interesting. I'm not enthralled with the choice for director. I'm okay with Jim Carrey. Obviously, there's a history with him and Odekirk that I think had to play some kind of role in him getting the job.
I love the idea. I think it's a brilliant idea for because the story starts with these 3 guys as young kids, and they burn down a neighborhood house, and they blame Ricky Stenicki. And then it just goes to them as adults where they've been blaming him for everything this whole time. I think it's a brilliant idea. And it's
well, obviously, I mean, it was a blacklist script. Yeah. So it has a good story to it.
And it centers on those three guys. So it's not, this is kind of where Carrie is set up to shine, is that he's not going to carry this movie, but he's going to have every opportunity to steal the show. He wasn't carrying Burt Wonderstone. He wasn't asked to. He's not carrying
Kick-Ass.
He's not. So I think he's finding a niche there and realizing that he can kind of do what he wants without having to shoulder the load, because it's like a Hangover type story about these three friends, but then Jim Carrey can come in and just kind of let loose. And yeah, his name's going to be attached. Yeah, he's going to be selling the movie, but it's not up to him to carry the entire thing, which I think will be, I think it's an interesting shift in his career, and I'm excited to see that.
Jim Carrey and Will Ferrell, for me, are very similar in what they do. And I think that when they're, I use the analogy of they're like radiation a lot, like in small doses, they're helpful, they're beneficial, but too much will kill you. And I think that kind of dialing it back, having a smaller role, he can be more effective in his screen time.
And I'm wondering how it's going to be, because this character could go one of two ways. If it's understated Jim Carrey in this kind of role, I think that's going to be brilliant.
Or Ace Ventura 2 Jim Carrey.
If it's Ace Ventura 2 Jim Carrey, I think there's still some aspects about it that I find intriguing, but I'm less interested. But sure. Odenkirk, I mean, he did Enter the Fist, which was just a weird experience. It's the first time in a while I've heard about a Jim Carrey movie and thought, I'm kind of really interested in that.
I mean, I thought Kick-Ass looked good. I mean, that's not a Jim Carrey project, so to speak. And I thought Burt Wonderstone sounded good, but with the writers behind that. But apparently, it's anything but magical.
Catwoman enters Nolan Stellar. Anne Hathaway signs on to star alongside Matthew McConaughey in Christopher Nolan's wormhole time travel follow-up to the Dark Knight trilogy, Interstellar.
So apparently, Chris Nolan just likes hanging out with Anne Hathaway, and who wouldn't, really?
Nolan does this, though. I mean, he's known, a lot of directors do, but he likes, if he works with somebody, he likes using them a lot.
I was going to say, a lot of directors do that. I mean, Scorsese's worked with DiCaprio quite a few times recently.
And De Niro earlier in his
career. Yeah, exactly.
Like, look at the Apatow. I mean, it's it's common to see, but I just,
Odenkirk, Jim Carrey, that dynamic duo.
In other Dark Knight reunion news, Morgan Freeman and Cillian Murphy board Wally Pfister's Transcendence. They joined Johnny Depp, Paul Bettany, Rebecca Hall, and Kate Mara.
Yeah, we talked a bit about not knowing much about Transcendence. We're learning a little bit about the computer integration with Johnny Depp's character. Not really sure. I mean, it sounds a bit like Lawnmower Man, but I gotta believe it's going to be better than that. What we do know about the film is it does have a pretty good cast.
The cast is awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's kind of is showing a lot of confidence in him as a director. You know, these absolute A-list actors that could pick just about any project they want are willing to say, all right, I'll give you a try. Maybe there's something that we don't know about Pfister from seeing we weren't on the set of any of the Batman films. But maybe if we had been, we'd know that, you know, he was more than just a DP on those projects, perhaps.
I mean, it goes back to make a football analogy, like any of the coaches that worked with Parcells or that worked with Belichick. Like, you get that if you're somebody who's so well respected and you're their right hand man for a long time, some of that respect automatically trickles down. It's just up to you whether you keep it or not, because I think you automatically get some of it. So I think Wally Pfister
is like Charlie Weiss.
Yeah, but he's got to maintain it. So
he's got to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So James Gunn loves Michael Rooker, adds him to the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy. Sadly, not as Rooker Raccoon. He'll play Yondu, who in the comics is one of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
I love Rooker. I'd like to see him in anything. I'm okay that he's going to be in this movie. I don't know what a Yondu is. I barely know what a Rocket Raccoon is.
Yondu, he's a blue dude with mohawk. He, in the comics, he's one of the original. He is one of the ones that formed Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know that he'll have that big of a role in this one, but I like Rooker.
Yeah, I mean, he's another one, though, like, I think can be effective with...
And he's one that Gunn uses whenever he can.
Yeah. It's a lot like the Odenkirk Carrey duo.
This Week in Fart Noise, Danny Woodburn, cast as Splinter in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, okay. Moving on. I mean, there's no point. That's spent entirely too much time on.
Oriental. He's not a martial arts expert.
Or a rat.
But the rat, so you're not going to flashback? You're not going to have backstory?
The turtles are aliens, dude.
Part of the like most intriguing thing about Turtles is Splinter's backstory. And
with the Shredder,
and
I know.
With the Shredder. And now you're eliminating that because you hired Danny Woodburn from Seinfeld. What's he going to, I mean, is he, he's supposed to be a martial arts master.
The turtles are supposed to be turtles, but they're not. Forget it. Anything Michael Bay does on this, don't get surprised. Don't get angry. Just say, I do whatever. I'm not going to see the movie. There's nothing they can do.
Don John to get off with an October 18th nationwide release.
I'm bummed. It was supposed to come out this summer. I think the movie's going to be pretty cool. It's Joey Gordon-Levitt's directorial debut, something that has been kind of a passion project for him. I like the projects that, you know, he chooses to be involved with. This one, his involvement is huge. So I am really excited to see it. I'm just bummed that I've got to wait a little bit longer.
This is a tough sell during the summer, though.
You're right. It is.
I feel like if this is a summer release, it's a limited release.
Yeah.
Whereas October, it can go nationwide.
Either way, though.
I thought it'd be a limited release either way. The concept seems hard to sell to a mainstream audience, but you got him. You got Scarlett Johansson. Maybe that'll carry
I'll tell you how you sell it. You say, hey, this movie's about porn addiction, and it's starring Scarlett Johansson. That's all. That's all you say.
Fair enough. David O. Russell's American Bullshit, now officially titled American Hustle.
Well, you were right. You knew that the title was going to get changed. I'm not surprised. Either way, it's going to be an awesome... With the cast, with the story, it's going to be an awesome movie, and that's no bullshit, but it makes no difference to me. A rose by any other name.
Yes, diggity. Universal officially announces Pitch Perfect 2 for 2015. Kay Cannon will return to write the script again, and the majority of the cast is expected to be back as well.
I don't like that. I don't like a majority of the cast.
It's early.
I know.
They don't know where they're at yet.
I'm just saying, I don't care if Rebel Wilson's back. Not at all. Sorry. Maybe that's blasphemy, but I don't care.
You don't have a movie if Rebel Wilson's not back.
I don't see it if Anna Kendrick's not in it. That's all I want to know.
If Anna Kendrick and Rebel Wilson are the only two to come back, that's enough.
That's fine. But if it's just Rebel Wilson, I'm walking.
Well, yeah. No, that's obvious.
That's all I'm saying, Dave. Don't get angry with me. I'm just saying, I don't care about this movie until I find out if Anna Kendrick 47's coming back.
In other news, it's a sad, 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 sad world. Jonathan Winters, longtime funny man, his movie career, most notably a movie that we both love, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, he passed away last week. Kind of a bummer. He was one of the funniest guys ever. Really sad to see him go.
Pulled up the IMDb page here. His credits span from a lot of TV work from 1954 all the way up through 2002 was, again, kind of... Mostly TV stuff. I would say maybe his best known from the big screen would be probably It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. He was in the Flintstones.
He's also voice of Papa Smurf in the Smurfs movie and the Smurfs 2 coming out later this year.
One of those guys that, you know, I don't claim to have seen, you know, most of his stuff, but for being as slapsticky as It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is, I think he was great in that movie. And I think that it does take a very talented kind of person to pull off slapstick and not just kind of, especially now as cynical as people are, to not just elicit groans.
My best friend that I grew up with, Zane, in like fourth grade, he sent Zane an autographed headshot. I don't remember how Zane got it, but he had an autographed headshot that was hanging in his room. And me as a punk, like fifth grader, I knew who Jonathan Winters was from TV, but I hadn't really watched anything. So just one day, I start telling him how Jonathan Winters isn't funny. And Zane got so mad at me. And like, we've had so few fights throughout our 20-some year friendship. One of the biggest ones was in that first year when I told him Jonathan Winters wasn't funny. And I've always regretted it because it took me a few years, probably early high school, to where I started paying attention to Jonathan Winters' career. And I realized I was wrong. Of course, I never told Zane that.
No.
But it was just, and to this day, Zane still has that picture framed. So Jonathan Winters always had this like personal I always had this personal connection with him. Just, I know it sounds silly and it sounds dumb, but when there's a story like that that's just been sitting in you for 20 years and then he passes, yeah, it kind of hits you. So that kind of bummed me out this
week.
Pouring
out for Papa Smurf.
From sad news to pointless news, MTV Movie Awards were this week. We put up a blog post on the website, moviesonup.com, where we picked our winners, and listener Tyler, who this whole thing was for him, he sent us in picks. So we're just going to fly through some winners and get you the winners of the MTV Movie Awards.
Without further ado.
And Jennifer Lawrence, they tried to give her crap for not showing up. Jennifer Lawrence doesn't need to be at the MTV Movie Awards.
So. No, I think she's set as far as awards this year. I don't think she, yeah.
Best scaredest crap performance. Nominees were some chick from Texas Chainsaw 3D, Jessica Lawrence, House at the End of the Street, Jessica Chastain from Zero Dark Thirty, which I don't get, Martin Freeman from The Hobbit, and the little kid from Life of Pi. Ryan picked Martin Freeman. Me and Tyler both picked J-Law. Life of Pi won, which is weird.
I would be afraid if I had to be on a raft with a tiger.
I am shocked that kids that watch the MTV Movie Awards and take the time to vote have seen Life of Pi.
Maybe kids don't watch MTV anymore. Maybe it's,
who's,
I don't know,
voting?
23-year-olds. I don't have a clue.
Best Kiss. Emma Watson and Logan Lerman from The Perks of Being a Wallflower. J-Law, B. Koops from Silver Linings. Kara Hayward and Jared Gilman from Moonrise Kingdom. Kerry Washington and Jamie Foxx from Django Unchained. And Mila Kunis and Mark Wahlberg from Ted. Ryan went with Moonrise Kingdom. Tyler and I both went with Perks of Being a Wallflower. Winner, Silver Linings Playbook. We're all 0 for 2 so far.
In fairness, I don't really think that I thought we were keeping score.
No.
And that'll become evident when we get to a category.
Yeah. Best on-screen duo, Iron Man and the Hulk from The Avengers. Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis from The Campaign. They were rivals in that movie. They weren't really a...
Didn't see the movie, did you?
Same Leo DiCaprio and Samuel Jackson.
No, you didn't see that movie either, did you?
No, I did. That one makes more sense. Bradley Cooper and J-Law in Silver Linings Playbook. Marky Mark and Seth MacFarlane and Ted. We all three went with Ted. Winner, Ted.
Hey, we're on the board.
A breakthrough performance. Eddie Redmayne from Les Mis. Ezra Miller, Perks of Being a Wallflower. Kwon Zavala Wallace, Beasts of Southern Wild. Rebel Wilson, Pitch Perfect. And the kid from Life of Pi. We all went Rebel Wilson. Rebel Wilson won. She also hosted the event. So.
Yeah. I smelled something in the air on that one.
Best shirtless performance. C. Tates from Magic Mike. C. Bale from Dark Knight Rises. D. Craig from Skyfall. Seth MacFarlane from Ted.
S. Mac.
And Taylor Lautner from Twilight. Ryan was disqualified for this category. I went with C. Tates. Tyler went with T. Louts. Winner, T. Louts. Best fight. The Avengers versus Loki. Batman versus Bane.
Why did I get disqualified?
You picked the chick from About Cherry.
Yeah, I did.
Christian Bale versus Bane. Jamie Foxx versus The World. Danny Craig versus Ola Rapace from Skyfall. And Marky Mark versus Ted. Ryan went with Ted. I went with The Avengers. Tyler went with Batman. I won The Avengers. Best WTF moment. Anna Camp puking in Pitch Perfect. Denzel landing the plane in Flight. Django blowing up Candyland in Django. Homoeroticism in Skyfall, or Ted flirting with the checkout girl in Ted. We all three went with puke. Winner, Django Unchained.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems odd.
Yeah. WTF to that. Best villain, Javier Bardem from Skyfall, Leo from Django, Marion Cotillard, spoiler alert, from The Dark Knight Rises, Tom Hardy from Batman, and Tom Hiddleston from The Avengers. Ryan went Leo. I went Bane. Tyler went Loki. Winner, Loki. So I think that puts Tyler up one on us. Best musical moment, Strippers of Magic Mike, something from Perks of Being a Wallflower, and then the No Diggity scene from Pitch Perfect. We all went Pitch Perfect. Pitch Perfect won. Movie of the year, Avengers, Batman, Django, Silver Linings, Ted. Ryan went Silver Linings. I went Ted for some reason. Tyler went Avengers. Avengers won. So in the end, Tyler got 6. I got 4. You got 3. So the young kid won. Well, I find solace in that.
It was his idea.
Yeah.
He had to win.
So that was the MTV Movie Awards. Debuting at the MTV Movie Awards, new trailer for The Hunger Games. Did you watch The Hunger Games Catching Fire?
Yeah, I saw the trailer. I got to admit, it pretty much as advertised. There was a lot of fire in the trailer. Like, I get it. I get it. Catching fire. It's not just a subtitle. There are things that are sure heating up.
Well, she's the girl on fire.
That point was hammered home a couple times, too.
I liked the trailer. I liked how it was done. I've said that this book is going to be the hardest of the three to adapt. I like that it's center. You see a lot of Philip Seymour Hoffman, so you kind of see that they've got legit actors in here. And the way it's kind of an understated trailer, like it's kind of darker. It takes the darker approach to it. I'm excited for this movie regardless. I could not see a trailer until next November and be excited for it. This didn't kill that at all.
No, I mean, that's a movie that I'm not going to wait in line to see. I probably won't go out of my way to see, but I won't go out of my way to not see it. I mean, the first one was good enough. This one seems like it'd be maybe more interesting to me, but I don't need to see a trailer for it. Like, I think I get it. At this point, I get what it's about, so whatevs.
One that you might have thought you knew what was about, but maybe this trailer changed your mind a little bit. The Hangover 3. It's the second trailer for this. There was a teaser earlier. This one goes a little bit more into the plot.
Yeah, and it has about three times more Zach Galifianakis, where it seems like they've said, okay, what has worked from the first two? I know, Zach Galifianakis and Senior Chang. So yeah. we get a lot of those guys in the trailer.
But it actually sets up a plot. I mean, there's more plot in this trailer than there was in all of the second one.
Didn't see the second one, so I cannot speak to that.
You saw the first one, so it's the same thing.
All right.
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be fun. I think putting them in a different kind of scenario will be good. Just a little shot of him putting sunglasses on what's now like a three-year-old kid. I like that shot. Stuff like that. I really do. As soured as I am on the second one, I really do love The Hangover. Like, it didn't change my mind on that. I love that. That movie hit me at a time that I really do love The Hangover. I love Zach. I love that whole cast. So I'm excited to see where they go with it. I'd rather not have the second one in the middle, but I'm excited for it.
I'm excited for it to be over.
Another one that we got a second look at, we criticized The Kings of Summer for their teaser trailer because it was pretty terrible. This week they released a longer one that also gave you a little bit more plot.
A lot more plot. And from what I read, people seem to hate this trailer. And I'm thinking, well, did you see the teaser? Like, this actually tells you what the hell the movie's about. And now I'm interested. I think the trailer looks good.
It looks really good. What's interesting to me is that some of the headlines I read about the trailer are like, oh, it doesn't have the charm that the movie has, or it doesn't bring the added. I love the charm and the attitude of the trailer.
I've not seen the movie yet. Generally, I see the trailer before I see the movie.
Yeah, so if it's like, if it's that magnified, I'm for it. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it's better than the teaser. So I'm for that, too.
Because here's the thing. I was interested in this movie. I love the cast. Nick Offerman, Megan Mullally, Alison Brie. The teaser was terrible.
Yes.
Like, I was still interested in the movie just because, but the teaser showed nothing. This, I'm actually really excited for. This is the one that listener Tyler is in, also.
Yeah. Probably might mention that later on in the week. And just, if you're going to have Alison Brie in a movie, put her in the trailer. Thank you.
Yeah. Next one, James McAvoy, drug addicted cop, I guess, and Filth.
Doing his best Ewan McGregor. Just, I mean, from the guy that did Trainspotting, it looks very much like that. Same author wrote this. It looks very similar. I mean, it's a drug trip, but it's, you know, from...
While solving a crime?
I don't know if he's solving a crime. I didn't know if he's just, if this is kind of like Bad Lieutenant or if it's just the guy's a mess and just happens to have a license to kill.
And you know what? I'm turned on McAvoy.
No, I know you are.
I saw Welcome to the Punch. He was like a hard ass cop, like a badass, and he brought it. It's got me more excited for Trance and it's got me excited for this. I've turned into where I can buy James McAvoy as a badass. And this, I think, looks very, very interesting.
There's a lot of stuff in the trailer. I mean, it pacing-wise, I mean, it goes...
It's a wild trailer.
Yeah, I mean, you got to wait about 15 seconds, and I think he's dropped a C-bomb. He's had some pretty rad sex. He may even have done drugs and puked in his car in 15 seconds.
Yeah, I like this James McAvoy a lot. Something I didn't like so much, trailer for Campus Life.
It's interesting we just came off a James McAvoy trailer because it seemed like this movie was a bit like First Class, but the Birdemic version of First Class. the special effects looked, it looks like a sci-fi original movie and not one that I would watch.
It's got Jesse McCartney, which that's strike one, I think.
And Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese and Ray Liotta show up. Yeah. It's actually, I believe it's Scorsese's niece or somebody that wrote this or is directing it. There's a relationship thing. The acting looks terrible.
Yep.
The effects look worse.
Yep.
It's like a college with where kids are finding their superpowers.
But they didn't know they had superpowers going in, and there's like a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Who's,
so,
I don't know if she's in SB 140 or what the deal was.
Moving on from that one, it doesn't get much better as we move on to the trailer for No One Lives from WWE Studios.
Spoiler alert? I mean, if you say right at the beginning that no one lives, then why do you need to see the movie? Lots of blood, lots of action, and lots of Funkasaurus in the trailer.
Oh, is he? Is there an actual wrestler in this one?
Yes, the okay. Funkasaurus.
Because I read the plot synopsis, and then I watched the trailer.
What was the plot synopsis, No One Lives?
No, it didn't. These guys kidnap a girl, and then the girl ends up dead, and it turns out that somebody is hunting them down.
I gathered no plot from the trailer.
It seemed like a mess.
Yep.
It seemed like a wreck. It just seemed like some dudes killing a bunch of people.
And that's fine. From a WWE picture, that's what I expect.
Also from WWE pictures, Romeo and Juliet.
WWE.
Maybe that's not from them.
No, I don't think it is.
Good. This is the one starring Saoirse Ronan.
It's Haley Steinfeld.
Oh, Haley Steinfeld, that's right.
Yeah, good to see her back.
She disappeared for a couple years.
Yeah, she did. She probably going like English class or something. Yeah. I think she's like 16.
From an Oscar nomination to just a couple years off, now she's got a bunch of stuff lined up.
Yeah, and I mean, this straight up Shakespeare. It's not like the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet. It is...
So in other words, we've seen it a million times.
At least a couple, yeah.
I don't understand the point of this movie.
And I mean, I'm not a giant Shakespeare guy, but I'll give Luhrmann credit for at least doing something modern with it, and Joss Whedon with Much Ado About Nothing. The dialogue is straight Shakespeare, but it's still kind of updated.
Where this is not.
And yeah, I don't know why we need this.
I don't
this.
Understand the point for... Everybody knows...
It's got a good cast, though.
The cast is great. Yeah. The cast is very good, but I'm not going to see it. I know the story. I've seen it a million times. It's pretty much at that point with Shakespeare that it's been done so often that you need to do something different because it's been done. Like, you got to do something different with it. I don't know. This just, it looked terrible.
It looks like a stage adaptation.
I'm not going to say it looks terrible.
Yeah.
It looks good.
It'll probably be good.
It looks well done. Yeah. It looks well acted. It looks well shot. The cast looks good. I'm escaping the kid's name, but he has a bunch of stuff coming out where he's probably poised to be a pretty big star here pretty soon. But and then she's good. She's just really good. But I've seen it so many times.
Douglas Booth.
That's it.
Dougie Booth. Dougie Fresh.
Going on with the movies that I won't see trailers, Java Heat.
This is another one that I'm kind of glad you put the trailer on here because I was going to talk about it, and I still will in the summer preview. It's another one of the werewolves from Twilight, Kellan Lutz.
He's one of the vampires.
Is he? I don't know. He's one of something.
He's Drayton Cullen.
Okay.
I don't know.
So he's a vampire.
I believe he's a vampire.
Is what you're telling me. So
you've seen the movies.
I've seen two of them, but I don't know who any of them are, nor do I care.
He's the hunky blonde one who can't act.
The only thing, I know Anna Kendrick was in Twilight, however briefly, and he is not her. So that much I am aware of, but at any rate, it's one of the fellows from Twilight's and Mickey Rourke. One of them is playing a terrorist. Can you guess who's overacting his way through an action movie? It is in fact Mickey Rourke. This looks like Kellan Lutz is setting himself up to be Taylor Lautner, and this is his abduction. Except it's rated R, so people that the Twihards can't even get in to see this.
I think Kellan Lutz's fate was already sealed. Like, he didn't get much from. He's got a motion capture Tarzan coming out. That's probably his biggest role. He didn't really.
Was he in the Friday the 13th?
He might have been
remake.
I think he was. But he hasn't really cashed in on the Twilight fame because I don't really think he's good. And if you watch the trailer, he looks terrible. It looks like it's got Showdown Little Tokyo type feel, where he's teamed with a cop from another country, and it just doesn't look good.
Hercules 3D, he's in pre-production on that one, so let's not sell him short. He's doing the Tarzan, but he's also doing Hercules. Was in the Immortals as Poseidon. Now that you mention it, or now that I mention it, I do remember him in that. That movie was not really that great. Was in Nightmare on Elm Street, and he got killed really early in that one, too.
Nightmare on Elm Street, okay. Yeah. That's enough Colin Lutz. We're on Lutz overload.
A whole lot of Lutz.
I'm all out of Lutz. Elysium is the next one from Neil Blomkamp, who I love. Best Picture nominee, District 9. That's one of my favorite movies. It's top 10 ever.
Oh, was that nominated for Best Picture?
That was nominated for Best Picture.
Who knew?
I love it. This is Matt Damon infiltrating the rich people.
Yeah, again, it's something I feel like we've seen before. You know, it's... You go back to the time machine with the Morlocks living underground, the, you know, the fair people living above ground. It's the same kind of thing. People, the rich people live in Elysium above the earth. Matt Damon literally lives in trash. But to quote Bart Scott, can't wait. I'm pumped for this.
Here's my thing on the trailer. I'm so excited for this movie. I've been on board from the get-go. I really want to see what Blomkamp does next. Getting Matt Damon was huge. The plot sounds awesome. Trailer was underwhelming. The trailer really didn't do anything for me. Like, every Star Trek trailer I've watched gives me goosebumps. There was a new one this week that I refused to watch because I feel like I've seen too much of it. Because
you just can't stand it.
Yeah, and same with Iron Man. Like, I was already excited for that movie. The trailer gave me, like, goosebumps. Like, I want that reaction from movies I'm really excited about. This didn't give me that. So it didn't give me that, like, chill of, like, I need to see this movie today. But I'm still excited. It didn't make me any less excited. I just think it's a poor trailer, and I think it'll still be an awesome movie.
I didn't need very much from this trailer. Actually, I didn't think I needed anything from it. There's sometimes...
You could put Matt Damon in the suit on a pipe banging with two little kids, and
yeah,
I'd have been fine.
And I'd have been, yeah, I'd have been fine. There's some movies that I've already made up my mind. I don't need very much. All I need to hear is, hey, this one's from the guy that did District 9. All right, fine. Yeah. Show me where to stand.
One that I was already excited about, just from who's writing it, who's in it, The Way, Way Back. We got a trailer from it. It got some good reviews out of Sundance. It got picked up. Written by Jim Rash and Nat Faxon, who won an Oscar for The Descendants. They actually directed this too, and it looks like Nat Faxon has a pretty big role in it, which I like him.
And Jim Rash, like, the one section he shows up in the trailer is the section I laugh the hardest at.
Yeah, he just looks great.
He looks great.
The doctor said, don't get water in my head.
Yeah, just the line he has is so ridiculous. But I was reading a bit about this for the summer preview. I'm pretty excited about this movie. And I read a quote where they were talking to Sam Rockwell. And the irony of him playing a nice guy and Steve Carell playing a dick, he loves that.
I know, and it's Steve Carell is one of the most likable guys, but just in the trailer, you can tell, like, oh, he's not that in this.
Sure.
It doesn't look like
in the first 5 seconds.
And it doesn't even look like he's the kind of character that's going to turn. Like, mm-hmm. I have a feeling you're going to hate him the whole time. And he looks like he's going to pull it off. And Sam Rockwell being Sam Rockwell, like, this is the Sam Rockwell I love. The chemistry between Nat Faxon and him look good. Maya Rudolph. There's so much about this movie I'm excited about. Like, I want this movie now.
Yep.
Like, I already did. Like, Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, that had me from the get-go. The cast, Sam Rockwell, Steve Carell, I was on board. This trailer gave me the reaction I wanted Elysium to give me, where I need to see this today.
Did you get goosebumps?
I did. Hold. That's a callback to the trailer.
Which they already called. They called back
in
the trailer.
It's hard to pull off something in the trailer. Like, we talked
twice
about parental guidance, where it kept going back to a nutshot. This is a really good callback, just in the trailer. Like,
yeah, it's or Grown Ups 2, calling back to Grown Ups 1.
Like, I'm just excited. It looks like what people wanted Adventureland to be. It looks like a coming of age.
It's what people thought Adventureland was going to be, based
yes
on what they told us Adventureland was going to be.
Pretty much, yes, yes. It looks like an Adventureland that actually is a comedy. And I love Adventureland, don't get me wrong. I do love it. It was marketed as a comedy like this one is.
Sure.
Coming to theaters this week, only one wide release. It's kind of slowing down a little bit before we get into the heavy-hitting Caesar. Tom Cruise's Oblivion.
I think it looks pretty rad.
It looks interesting. I like that it's the first of... We're going to have about 4 Tom Cruise sci-fi movies within the next 3 or 4 years. He's got All You Need Is Kill, which I'm excited about. He's on board the Blacklist script, Our Name is Adam, which that was one of my favorite like synopses from the Blacklist script, and he's got one more. I think it'll be cool. I don't know what kind of interest there is. Give me over under on Oblivion.
That's not fair. I'm going to say 32.
Oh, under.
Okay.
Oh, under.
Okay.
Yeah. Limited this week, we got Lords.
I'll take the over on that.
Take the over on 32?
I'll take the over on 32. Right.
Limited's Lords of Salem. That's the new Rob Zombie, if you want to call it new. Looks like a Rob Zombie movie.
Yeah. Don't think it looks that good, to be honest with you.
Well,
I had high hopes. I saw a trailer for it.
Oh, did you see it? Because the only trailer I saw was the one that was like a music video.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, I didn't think it looked that good.
On DVD this week, Django Unchained and Save the Date. If you're not going to go see Oblivion or stay home and watch Django Unchained or Save the Date, Ryan, give them something they can watch at home.
I sure will. We talked a bit about, you know, prequels, the prequel to Psycho, Bates Hotel. Just on DVD a couple weeks ago, Hitchcock came out, which was an Academy Award nominee for makeup for Anthony Hopkins as his portrayal of Alfred Hitchcock. And he does a phenomenal job in the movie, not just with the makeup, but demeanor-wise, in his speech patterns. He does a really good job of getting inside of Hitchcock, and it kind of makes you forget that you're watching Hannibal Lecter act his way through this movie. He's great in it. And I think, you know, a lot of times people forget, you know, how good Hitchcock was, and people think of him as the guy that directed Psycho and, you know, maybe The Birds, and don't realize that when he made Psycho, he wasn't a horror director. I mean, he was making Bourne movies, essentially. I mean, North by Northwest, which is what he made right before Psycho, was they wanted him to direct Casino Royale, the Bond movie. He said, no, I just did that. It was called North by Northwest. So Psycho was so different from what he was doing. He financed it himself. So, I mean, I like movies about the making of movies, and I really liked this one.
I usually don't. I'm not big on biopics usually, and I'm not big on movies inside movies. I thought it was a lot better than I expected. I saw it back before Oscar season, and I was really into it. Like, I liked it a lot more than I ever would have expected. I'm not going to go too far off the radar on this one. We talked about Jim Carrey and how I enjoy an understated Jim Carrey. I'm going to give you something I'm sure you've seen before, but watch it again, because if you watch, I think people forget how good it was. Truman Show. I knew I loved that movie. I just watched it again a few weeks ago. It's even better than I remember it, and I remember it being great. Like, it holds up. It's such a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, Truman and I got a special place in my heart for Eternal Sunshine. I think that's really,
that's always,
really good.
I mean, that's a perfect movie to me.
Yeah.
But Truman Show is just so, him in that movie, it's so sad that he's gotten, as his career's gone on, it's turned into like, oh, he just wants an Oscar. Oh, he's trying so hard to get an Oscar. And then you watch the Truman Show and realize, it's a shame this guy doesn't have an Oscar. Like, to watch that performance, it's like, where have you gone wrong that you have this ability and you just haven't?
Or even like when Man on the Moon, like when he was Andy Kaufman, he was still being weird, but he had to, because Andy Kaufman was weird.
Yeah.
But he did so well in that movie doing the Kaufman Clifton stuff. And
there's a great story from Bob Zemuda about when he got cast for that. And he showed up to Jim Carrey's house, and Jim Carrey said, oh, can you wait in the theater? I'm still getting ready. And Bob Zemuda sits in the theater, and he's playing Andy Kaufman clips. And Bob Zemuda's like, "This, the ball's on this kid. Like, I've seen all this stuff. I did all this." And then Jim Carrey comes in, and Bob Zemuda's like, kind of upset. He's wasted all this time. He's like, "Yeah, I heard you put something on tape for me to see." And Jim Carrey goes, "Yeah, what do you think of it?" Like, the guy that was with Andy Kaufman the whole time thought he was watching Andy Kaufman. That's how he got the role. Like, the studio wanted Nick Cage at some point. So, I mean, yeah, watch The Truman Show. We kind of went on a rant there. But this week, later this week, we have our discussion episode. It's our summer preview. I'm excited for it. I like summer preview. We got Iron Man 3 in a couple of weeks. We're going to go over weekend by weekend from May through August. And we're going to set up the rules for Box Office Bash, which is our summer game, similar to Film Ball. But we'll set up the rules in that. After that episode goes up, we'll throw up a blog post about the rules. So if you have any questions, it's always going to be there on the site. We'd love you to play along with it. We had 10 people for Film Ball. We want to get, I'd like to get a lot more than that. Until then, hit us up, moviesonup.com. You can get us any way there. There's twitter.com @moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup, moviesonup@gmail.com. Go to iTunes, subscribe to us, leave us a review. And we're on Stitcher now. I know a lot of people use Stitcher, so you can find us on Stitcher as well. I have another show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. Hit that up at ericanddave.com. Ryan, you got anything else? That's it?
Yep, that's it. Until next week.
Until next week. Until later this week, summer preview.
That's true. I tried to correct you last week.
So summer preview later this week. Until then.
Keep it up.